Want to know why Donald Trump isn't the fantastic, flawless, perfect leader that he thinks he is? Well, I have the economist Scott Pearson on my show today to tell us why. You're listening to the Leadersmith Podcast.
In a world of incompetent bosses, micromanagers, and petty tyrants, you are listening to the Leadersmith. Now, here is your host, Darren Gurdes.
Okay, so welcome to this episode of the Leadersmith Podcast. I'm talking with Dr. Scott Pearson of Palm Beach Atlantic University. Scott Pearson is a finance professor. He's also a former colleague of mine at Charleston Southern. I'm so happy to have him on the show. Welcome, Scott.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So we had this somewhat inflammatory title, Why Trump Isn't the Fantastic, Flawless, Perfect Leader That He Thinks He Is, and a subtitle to that, and Why Hillary Would Be No Better. And what I wanted you to talk about was why that is the case, I mean, why he can't actually lead like he thinks he could.
Well, I suppose the biggest problem is that he's human. And what I mean by that, well, Friedrich Hayek is an economist, and he described once the curious task of economists. He said that our job is essentially to describe to men why they can't plan the things that they imagine they can design. And this is really, that's a bad paraphrase, but this is really at the core.
It's a bad paraphrase, but I'm laughing because at every episode I have a quotation for contemplation. That is the quote. And we didn't talk about this ahead of time.
No.
Amazing.
But it really is at the core of this issue. I think, you know, with politicians, we kind of have this imagination that they can solve problems. And to a small extent, they maybe can do that. But the kinds of issues we're looking at today are broad, all-encompassing problems that take in massive knowledge from multiple fields. And that's the kind of problem that really lends itself to this kind of discussion. There is no human on earth that could have this kind of capacity. And so what it comes down to is that we've got to be a little bit more humble in our expectations and in our own imagination of our own ability, and recognize that no individual human is going to have the capacity to know all the right answers in a case like this.
So I'm not saying that Trump is a horrible, horrific loser type, right? But what we are saying here, and those are his words, not mine, okay? What we are saying is that nobody has the ability. Like Hillary wouldn't have been better. Biden wouldn't be better just because the problem is so enormous.
I think the problem comes about when we begin to imagine ourselves having that kind of capacity, and in our leaders as well, when they imagine themselves having that capacity to do all of these things. And so in my mind, a good leader would be one that has the humility to stand back and say, well, I don't have all the answers. Let me defer to, you know, we look to them maybe to defer to experts, but I don't know that there's an expert today that could have all of these answers as well. And so this is why we look to the market, and we anticipate that individuals can make the best choices for themselves. And that doesn't mean individuals are always going to make the right choices. But if we allow people more choices and more flexibility, that leads to better results on margin.
Okay, so you anticipated my next question, which was, if you thought of a leader who would lead right, the reality is it's not about the one leader, right? We agree on that. But who would lead, just can you think of somebody who would lead in such a way that described what you just described? Because that's what the leader needs to be doing, is to free up other people in order to be able to lead themselves, to manage themselves, to do, like, they're worried about the environment, not in telling them what to do, but to create an environment where they can do those things. Does that make sense?
It does. And I'd agree with that. I think that's really our goal. For a leader, we want somebody that has a recognition that there are a lot of problems and that there are a lot of cases that we have to solve. And this is true whether we're talking about on a national level or at a business organization or a nonprofit, whatever. But our recognition of that limited capacity is at the core, our humility is at the core of being a good leader. recognizing that we don't have all the answers and recognizing, you know, we do have to seek out those answers. We do have to do our best to try to resolve cases, but as much as possible, we want to leave decisions to those who are on the front lines, who maybe see the answers better than we could at any perch.
And that's exactly what the best organizational leaders do. They decentralize, they push authority decision-making down as far as possible. You can almost always tell when a leader's bad at this, when they're trying to become the central hub at the very top and all decisions need to go through them. It's always a bad sign. So let's do this. Let's compare governors. Have you seen how, like, different states have done different things, right? So have you seen how, you know, some states have done it right and some states have done it less right? Can you compare governors?
Well, I know, you know, for example, I'm in Florida and I know our governor has caught a lot of flack because he's not come down and made all the decisions. And in some ways, I think that may be a better choice, recognizing again that he doesn't have the answers. So for example, I'm in Palm Beach County and Palm Beach County closed before other counties did and opened up slightly after the other counties did because that deference was given to the individual counties to make the choices for themselves. And I believe, if I remember correctly, the counties to the south of me are still closed or are just starting to begin opening up yesterday or today. And so, you know, Miami and Fort Lauderdale are behind the rest of the state opening up. The rest of the state has been open up longer than my county has. And that, to me, reflects a better decision-making process.
Then what kind of governor?
Well, you know, the poster child for interesting choices, I think, always goes back to Michigan. And, you know, you hear about the wide variety of things that are restricted up there. You can't visit your summer home. You can't have guests in your house. The drive-in theater can't open up, which just boggles my mind. But if you think about it, I'm sure there are reasons why we might decide any of those particular things. But to me, the problem with that kind of thinking is this. At some point, we have to move forward and we have to start making choices about how we can function in this new and very different world. We're probably going to be dealing with this virus for many, many months, maybe years. The likelihood of a vaccine coming out before 18 months from now is virtually zero. And so if we're going to be working with this, we need to have some flexibility. We need to have the ability to make choices and learn from those choices. And in a very restrictive environment, you really can't do that kind of adapting. And so I think those states are going to be struggling to adapt and to really begin to make choices that will help us to reduce the likelihood of transmission.
Yeah, so, you know, when you were explaining that, I was thinking of comparing governors, just because I'm in South Carolina, I was looking at the difference between Georgia and South Carolina. And the governor in Georgia got a lot of flack because he didn't really bring in his the mayors of different municipalities. So the mayor of Atlanta was lambasting him. Whereas in South Carolina, and you know, having lived in South Carolina, we got our share of problems, right? But the governor here actually was dealing with local leaders and asking local leaders about getting their feedback and getting their opinions. And then when he said, hey, we're going to reopen as you see fit to reopen, it worked out better because he was doing kind of what you were just saying.
Yeah.
So at any rate, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think that's important to really localize choices as much as possible because, and you know, what's the closest local level is the individual, right? And so the individual really, to a large extent, needs to be able to make choices for himself. But at least when we're talking about jurisdictions, if you can localize it, because again, looking at my own state, it's very clear that what was going on in Fort Lauderdale was very different than say Okeechobee County, which is inland from us. They, I think, had the very last sporting event. They held a rodeo right before the country closed, and they still had zero cases in their county. So I think people there were not really thinking about, you know, shutting down and didn't really understand the need for that. And But to a large extent, they didn't have the need yet at that point because they were not experiencing any kinds of symptoms or any kinds of cases there. And so when the case is different, when the situation is different, there's probably justification for a different kind of decision.
So what I find fascinating about this whole discussion is that what you are saying and what I am saying, what you're saying about economics and what I'm saying about leadership are essentially the same thing. When I'm talking about the decentralizing or the pushing down the decision making, it's the same thing as what you just articulated. We're just using different language for the same principles of this is how things should operate. And so that's why I wanted to bring you on. I knew how you were framing this because I saw you on the news clip, your local news clip, where the commentator was, so what's going to happen next? We don't know. Nobody can know, which is a brilliant answer. That's exactly right. And it's arrogant to think otherwise.
And this is really, I think, why I'm so fired up about the idea that we've got to have government start to make opportunities for people to be flexible. So, you know, I saw a news story just recently about how businesses are recognizing that the office may be in decline, that people can work from home very effectively. And I wouldn't want to be a real estate company that owns a bunch of office buildings right now. Yeah. Because I think office is not going away. People will still operate with offices. I think sometimes these news stories, you know, they catch a trend and run too far with it. But at the same time, I think we're going to see a massive shift towards working from home. But the limitation on that is so many of these zoning and code enforcement restrictions that restrict businesses operating out of their home and people working from home, homeowners associations that have those kinds of restrictions, and they've got to back off. This is going to be a really important factor in the coming years.
Yeah, that's all the same top-down stuff that we were talking about. Stop being top-down, stop being centralized, stop being heavy-handed. Let people make choices. Let them bear the responsibility for their choices, and guess what? They grow up. That's what we want for our children. It's the same thing. So anyway, I'll give you a last word before I tell you the exact quote from Hayek that you were paraphrasing earlier.
Well, I think the last word is flexibility. I mean, we've got to be individually flexible, governments have to be flexible, and we have to really be willing to learn as we go. This is a very, we talk about it being a novel coronavirus. It's a new thing. It's something that we're not familiar with. And so we have to all be learning, but with that, we have to have the flexibility to learn. We have to be given the choices.
Okay, so with that, here was the quote that you were trying to get to earlier. This is Hayek. It's from The Fatal Conceit, page 76. The curious task of economics is to demonstrate to men how little they really know about what they imagine they can design.
That's the story.
I mean, I'm not sure how you could say it any better than that. And I know you didn't. All right. So, hey, listen, I just want to say thank you for coming and expressing what you did, because using a whole different vocabulary to say the same kinds of things is really important. And I think our listeners have benefited from your experience. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.